G'day, this is Marty McCarthy with the Country Hour. Coming up today, we're going to take you into orbit.
4, 3, 2, 1, top, allumage Vulcain.
The rocket carrying a satellite that will bring high-speed internet services to remote Australians has been launched. It's worth $500 million and is critical to the national broadband network. And soon you'll meet the farmer who wants to get her pigs using social media.
So if we could actually get a tweeting pig, we're actually putting the narrative into the way the pig production cycle works.
Hashtag oink, but first let's head to National Rural News.
Hello, I'm Kath McAloon. Politicians and rural industry bodies have praised the launch of a new NBN satellite, saying it could address the data drought faced by many remote Australians. One academic has already warned the high speeds promised may rarely be achieved as more people sign up to the service. But Western Australian farmer and grains consultant May Connolly says any improvement on the dismal internet speeds currently offered is welcomed.
When you do, you know, an internet speed test, it fails. So it's slow to even register on the speed test. Having access to both the data plus increased speeds is just going to give us access to the internet, you know, like people in the city do.
Raylene Hall from Ned's Creek Station in WA says remote communities are pinning their hopes on the new satellite.
This rocket sort of went with all the hopes and aspirations of so many people out in the bush that it is going to make a huge difference to their future.
Thousands of cattle are being loaded and shipped out of Darwin today as exporters make an immediate start on filling the massive order by Indonesia for 200,000 head before the end of the year. Exporter Patrick Underwood said his company started loading 4,000 feeders in the early hours of this morning. After a tough third quarter, where Indonesia drastically reduced the amount of cattle it took from Australia, Mr. Underwood said the next 3 months would be very busy.
We started 4 o'clock this morning, so that's about as early as you can go for starting in Q4. So we've been waiting eagerly for the 1st of October because it got very difficult in keeping ships moving.
It's believed a $2 billion irrigation upgrade project in Victoria is short hundreds of millions of dollars to finish the job. Goulburn Murray Water is managing the project to modernise the irrigation system and return water to the environment under the Murray-Darling Basin Plan. Federal MP Sharman Stone has told ABC Rural the authority has found a $300 to $330 million shortfall in its ability to complete the job.
The fantastic Goulburn Murray irrigation system, which is bigger than Tasmania, about 25% of the state, now is not being able to grow the food that it should and keep the manufacturing and all those jobs going because Goulburn Murray Water has handled this incompetently.
The Shadow Agriculture Minister believes the politics of climate change is hurting the farming sector. Labor's Joel Fitzgibbon says farmers need a bipartisan, long-term approach to climate change to ensure their viability.
It's the land sector that's going to be most affected and is already being adversely affected by climate change. And yet, many in the land sector appear to be those most opposed to action on a changing climate. So I think it's incumbent upon all of us, industry leaders, farmers, politicians, to depoliticise the debate.
One of Tasmania's largest apple producers has backed calls for more exports to help boost domestic prices, but says the industry is already heading that way. CEO of Apple and Pear Australia Limited, John Dollinson, said the price of apples has dropped 25% on the back of increased production, and he's urged the industry to find more export markets to lift returns to growers. Howard Hansen from Hansen Orchards in the Huon Valley says they've been developing markets for Pink Lady apples in Asia, and this year there are significant export programs from several states.
In the international media last night, I read an article that exports of Australian apples are up 47% from last year. So at a 70-cent dollar, we can be competitive. This time 2 years ago, we were 105-cent dollar. And Australian wage rates, we haven't got a hope in hell.
Two big strawberry-producing regions sending fruit to market at the same time is leading to an abundance of berries and lower prices. Queensland's strawberry harvest was delayed because of cold weather, and production north of Perth is also now in full swing. Chair of Strawberries Australia, Sam Violi, says that's led to a lot of fruit being sent to market, and prices for growers are down.
I know some growers in Queensland come mid-August and they work prices out and then they'll decide to get out of the marketplace rather than lose money. Then you've got other growers hearing someone's getting out and they want to stick it out a little bit longer and causes a few little hiccups.
And deer farmers say they're getting paid far less than beef producers for their meat. Beef prices are breaking records, while the variability in the venison market and difficulty of processing deer has reduced the price processors pay. Andrew McKinnon of the Deer Industry Association stocks cattle, sheep and deer and says he's getting paid the least for deer.
We sold cattle there a couple of weeks ago and we were getting $3 a kilo live weight, which would be a bit over $6 a kilo book price. So it's about $2.50 a kilo below what cattle are selling for at the moment.
And the Australian Forest Products Association has become a member of Farm Lobby, the National Farmers Federation. The association represents timber growers, sawmillers and the pulp and paper industry. For today, that's Rural News.
Cheers, Kath. It's 11 minutes past 12.
This is ABC, Local Radio Queensland.
The ABC, in your community.
Marty McCarthy in the chair for Craig Zonka today on the Country Hour. And it's day one of the fourth quarter and live export ships bound with cattle, they're already making their way to Indonesia. They want 200,000 head over the next 3 months. But with the drought biting harder, where is all that cattle going to come from? That story coming up soon. And as the state's sugar crush meets the halfway mark, we'll check in to see how the major growing regions are faring. And still on that industry, could the debate over sugar marketing take a new turn? Outgoing Mackay Sugar Chief Executive Quinton Hildebrand yesterday stood down as chairman of the Australian Sugar Milling Council. How could that affect future negotiations? We'll find out soon. But first, blast off.
Allumage de CAP, décollage.
Yeah, that's the roar of the rocket carrying a piece of telecommunications equipment worth $500 million that could spell the end of hopeless internet services in the bush. It launched from South America earlier this morning. As the National Broadband Network satellite, known as SkyMaster, rockets into space, it's created a sense of optimism in parts of regional Australia. Christy Sparrow, based in Billawilla, has been lobbying hard for better internet for rural, remote and regional Australia, and she says the NBN satellite is critical. Christy was up early for the launch, and after many failed promises by government, she's really hoping this time the promises come true. That is better, faster internet access at a reasonable cost.
Yeah, it was quite exciting to watch it finally get in the air and all of the hopes and dreams people are placing on it to fix the bush internet.
What is it that you're hoping to get out of the NBN?
Well, what we're really hoping for, and I think everyone in the bush is hoping for, is equitable speed, data and costs for their internet services. Because currently, you know, somebody living in a regional town, large town or in a city is getting 40 times the speed, 40 times the data, and paying 40 times less than someone in the bush.
What sort of cost is that putting on your family, your business and your social life?
You don't use the internet socially because it's all used up for business and education purposes. There's lots of families leaving the bush because they can't get enough data. It's really a data drought and there's lots of businesses closing down, so it's really had a dramatic impact on people in the bush.
Okay, what do you need to know from the NBN then, now that it's launched and you've got about 6 months or so before you're actually going to be able to access it? What are the most important things that you want NBN to tell you?
I'd love to know data limits. Are there going to be data limits put in place on people using the long-term satellite? Because Malcolm Turnbull has referred to people in the bush as data hogs previously. And I don't think somebody using 60 gigabyte a month would be classed as a data hog if they lived in Melbourne, for example. I'd love to see them release their costs, what costs will be involved, and I'd love to see priority of access. So we're really pushing for people on old satellite services and people with no service at all to be prioritised onto the satellite, followed by interim satellite users. And, of course, those that are using it for educating their children.
What would be a reasonable amount of data that you should be able to access per month?
I'd like to see future-proofing of the data. So I'd like to see something in the vicinity of 150 gigabytes. Not saying that every family will use that, but I think that that would be a good plan, like higher end plan. Definitely anything over 50 gigabytes for an average user.
Okay, what about, you mentioned the costs?
Yeah, something a bit more equitable. You know, you can get unlimited internet only 60 kilometres away from me for $120, and yet I pay $160 for my 25. So I think, you know, something a little bit more equitable when compared to some of the larger centres. It will be up to the individual service providers on what packages they do come up with, but I'm hoping that it is a bit more equitable.
How do you justify your position in terms of priority access?
It really comes down to the amount people are paying and the amount of data they're getting. So for somebody getting 2 gigabytes for $120, they would have to be high up on the priority list compared to somebody who's getting 25 gigabytes at a better reasonable price. However, their speed is an issue.
Are your concerns being given a hearing?
Well, we haven't actually heard anything from the new Communications Minister as yet. I was hoping that it would be somebody that had a familiarity with bush people, but as yet we haven't heard anything from Senator Fifield. I've following both on Twitter, Malcolm Turnbull and Senator Fifield, and as yet neither of them have tweeted or read the satellite launch, which is a bit disappointing because it was, you know, put out there as a game changer for bush people, and I think they've got to remember that we are here and we are watching with bated breath to see what's happening.
How is your world, or the world of those people who are relying on satellite technology to provide them with the internet, hopefully going to change in the next year or two?
Well, hopefully we have equitable access to the internet and that we can use it for social reasons as well as education, running businesses, telehealth, and the possibilities really are endless. So the more data we can get, we are data hungry in the bush because that is our only means of communication with the outside world, and it's a digital world. And for us to keep up to speed with the rest of Australia, then we really need that equitable access.
Angie Bettridge, you're from Alpha. You're a mum and you're an internet user. You're a satellite user. What do you hope from SkyMuster?
I'm hoping to have a better access to data and also pricing plans. I'd like to see our speed improve. Currently, we're on a very, very slow speed. Very difficult to open any pages on the internet. It's proving very difficult at the moment. I also educate one student at distance ed, and currently I'm not sure how we're going to do school next week because of our slow speed.
Just how slow is it?
Well, most pages won't even load at all on the internet. You might have to wait 5 minutes for one page to load up. It's also making running of our business very difficult, banking, those sort of issues.
I was at the Isolated Children's Parents Association meeting earlier in the year. People were very sceptical about the NBN. Why were you so sceptical?
Well, I think we've heard all this before and we haven't really seen anything. And actually, it's gone backwards. You know, we've been limited to our data and you know, threatened that our plans will be cut off if we go in excess of our plans. So I think there's probably a lot of doubt around the new satellite. But fingers crossed it all works out, as they say, and we will see some benefits.
That's Angie Bettridge from Alpha, who, along with Christy Sparrow from Better Internet for Rural, Remote and Regional Australia, are hoping the new service that starts mid-next year will actually deliver on what a lot of people are saying it will. This is The Country Hour. Marty McCarthy with you today. It's 19 minutes past 12.
Mareeba, Mundubbera and Mitchell. Wherever you are, we've got you covered on The Country Hour on ABC Local Radio Queensland.
To cattle news now, because today is the start of the fourth quarter of cattle permits to Indonesia. There are already ships bound for Indonesia as exporters make an immediate start on filling orders for 200,000 head by the end of the year. A ship in Townsville will begin loading tomorrow, but boats out of Darwin, they got the head start. Patrick Underwood from the North Australian Cattle Company was at the Darwin port this morning loading cattle, and he spoke to our reporter, Matt Brand.
Yeah, we started 4 o'clock this morning, so that's about as early as you can go for you know, for starting in tier four. So we're loading the Galloway today, 4,000 feet of cattle for Indonesia. We've been waiting eagerly for the 1st of October because it got very difficult in August and September. Most exporters that delivered their cattle to Indonesia really by July, early August. So it's been quite difficult keeping ships moving.
Given the uncertainty around permits and the fact they were only really released this week, how hard was it to commit to having a ship ready to go on day one?
Yeah, quite difficult. And honestly speaking, it was as much to do with not having really obvious other choices. So as much as having some absolute clarity. I mean, we were confident. There was all the signals were there from the Ministry of Trade and the Ministry of Agriculture, and our importers we're talking to daily were certainly confident that 200,000 permits were going to be issued. However, in Q3 there was similar language around and similar confidence, and as we know now, history will tell us there was only the 50,000 feeder permits, which just doesn't go anywhere. So 200,000 is a good number. I think that's probably the feedlots are down to possibly 30% capacity over there. They need cattle because they weren't able to import them in Q3. There's obviously the shipping capacity to move those cattle, but the challenge for everyone will be finding those numbers of cattle and those numbers of good cattle.
We've heard this week that some exporters are paying over $3 a kilo for feeder steers, and the NT Cattlemen's Association thinks that price might go higher. What's your thoughts?
Well, I'm an exporter, so I'm not allowed to talk prices up, of course, but I put it this way, they are $3 now. There's not a lot of cattle around. We need cattle, and it is an open market based on supply and demand, so I think there'll be a little bit more to move in that price, but it'll be demand driven. It's difficult, very difficult to pass it on to our customers in market. We have to be mindful of that we're buying cattle at record prices, so we're landing them in market at record prices. That can create some difficulties, particularly if you're talking about a new and developing market like Vietnam, or if you talk about emerging markets or smaller markets like Malaysia or the Philippines. And of course, Indonesia. The Indonesian government is always talking about inflationary pressures on all commodities, but particularly beef over there. So they're often trying to influence or keep the price lower in wet markets and out of feedlots over there. So it makes it very difficult if they're trying to put that pressure on. And yet the Australian industry operates in an open market on supply and demand. So it's a challenge.
Yeah, that's Patrick Underwood from the North Australian Cattle Company. There are 5 cattle ships due out of Darwin Port over the next 7 days. Another will begin loading in Townsville tomorrow. But with the drought in Queensland continuing to bite hard, where will all that extra cattle come from? Lara Webster asked Charters Towers livestock agent Tony Bowen that question.
There is still cattle coming out of the woodwork that, we might have thought might have run out by now. So I think we are getting to the bottom of it, though. I mean, that the available cattle in the suitable weight range, there's definitely getting less and less of them. And you can see that with the cattle that are moving, there's more out-of-spec cattle and some rougher sort of clean skin types and that sort of thing. So I think there will be, there definitely is a limited number of cattle in the correct weight ranges. But, I mean, with the dry weather continuing, it does always push a few more on the market. So, there will be cattle available, but I definitely don't think it'll be in huge quantities.
Is the condition of these cattle that are coming onto the market good enough to be put on a boat to Indonesia?
Yeah, at the moment, Lara, the cattle we've been doing this week, there's quite a few cattle moving this week for a couple of shipments. And, that when you drive around and look at the countryside and just how dry it is, it's surprising how well the cattle have held up. But as it warms up, probably more so, it's just the suitable cattle in the weight ranges rather than the condition. That'll probably be the big thing. It'll just be that, having the cattle heavy enough, a lot of people sold down. They've sold down and down and down over the last 18 months. So that'll probably be more the point.
What kind of weight range would we be needing?
The bulk, the bulk of the Indonesian cattle have traditionally been 280 to 350, and this last shipment has come down to 230. So they've had two weight ranges from 230 to 280 and 280 to 350. So, in those traditional feeder weights, there just is less and less cattle in those weight ranges available. A lot of people are back to having their little weaners and probably some older cattle.
What kind of impact on price will these extra permits have?
I think obviously, there'll be probably more permits than what there is cattle available, definitely in this region. But like I say, with the reduced availability of those suitable cattle, I think there's only one way for prices to go. I think probably will put an upward pressure on prices, you would expect.
This week we saw 2,000 cattle that went through the Charters Towers sale yards. Last week was a bit over the 1,700 mark. Where are all these cattle coming from when we have our, I think, is it our fourth driest year on record?
Yeah, well, a lot of the cattle at the moment, and it surprised us too, as a group of agents. I mean, when we were looking at how the year played out in June, we thought we might have been, you know, struggling to maintain our yardings by now and having to go fortnightly. But we've been able to get enough cattle to go weekly, and not only enough cattle, we've been, you know, basically have yarded nearly a couple of thousand a week for the last 10 or 15 weeks. A big portion of our yardings here in Charters Towers over the last couple of weeks have been northern style cattle, some clean skin cattle and whatnot coming out of the north. So, yeah, there has been some rougher northern cattle coming forward, and at the prices that they're receiving, yeah, I mean, people are definitely taking opportunities to clean up some country.
How much longer then can these numbers be sustained for?
We've been making fools out of ourselves, making predictions over the last week, 6 weeks. We thought they might have been steadied up by now. So, I mean, I think there is an end, you know, definitely is an end date in sight. I mean, we can't keep guarding the numbers. I think they're going to have to tail off at some stage, but we might get another month or 6 weeks out of it, possibly.
That's livestock agent Tony Bowen speaking there with Lara Webster. You can find more of our coverage on the live export permits to Indonesia online at abc.net.au/rural. Marty McCarthy with you this afternoon. And hey, coming up, if you're a livestock farmer, would you consider installing a camera on your property so that the outside world can see how you raise your animals? That's what one West Australian pig farmer wants to do.
The thing we have to be able to do is somehow put a camera in our piggery so that people can look at that 24 hours a day. Because one of the things that I think all of the people from, you know, like Animals Australia or Voiceless say is that going through a piggery is not enough because they can't trust Australian farmers. So we need to be able to show them that 24 hours a day you can come into a piggery and you can see what that looks like and you can know what a production system really is like.
Yeah, what do you think about that? Would you do that as a farmer and as a consumer? Is that something you'd be interested in watching, rolling pig action 24 hours a day? That story up a little bit later on the Country Hour.
The ABC in your community.
ABC Local Radio, Queensland.
Should donations to environment groups be tax deductible? That's one question being asked by a federal parliamentary inquiry looking into whether Australia's register of environmental organisations needs a shake-up. The resources sector says groups like the Mackay Conservation Group, which mounted legal action against the $16 billion Adani coal mine, should not be eligible for tax deductible status. David Sparks filed this report from the hearing.
The town of Bowen in North Queensland is ground zero in a battle over the proposed Carmichael coal mine, which, although 600 kilometres away, would also involve a massive port expansion at nearby Abbott Point. Many residents and business groups in the town are desperate for the project to happen, believing it will provide an economic boost and thousands of jobs. The standing committee, which appeared in Bowen yesterday, has the task of looking at much wider issues around tax concessions given to environmental groups. Mackay Conservation Group launched its legal action against Carmichael Mine in January, leading critics to argue the group should not be eligible for tax-deductible donations or other government assistance. The group's coordinator, Alan Roberts, addressed the committee by telephone yesterday, and member for Dawson, George Christensen, asked her to clarify if the group was using tax-deductible donations to fund its legal action.
I gather that that is the case, that there would have been tax-deductible donations that went into your litigation efforts there?
Well, no, GetUp, I think your committee members might be familiar with that organisation.
Yes. How did they fund
and
that?
And so that was, yeah.
How did they fund that? By way of donation to the Mackay Conservation Group or by way of donation to the Environmental Defenders Office of New South Wales?
These would be questions probably directed at somebody else, wouldn't they?
Well, you were the lead litigant there, so you must know how it was funded.
Well, I mean, I think obviously we pay the Environment Defenders Office bills, yeah.
So GetUp donated to you, to the Mackay Conservation Group, got a tax deductibility for that, and then you paid Environmental Defenders Office of New South Wales. Is that how it went?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay. Well, can you tell me how it went? Can you tell me how it was funded? I'm confused as to how it was funded. My question is, did they donate that money then to Mackay Conservation Group and seek a tax deduction on that basis as an organisation?
I'm going to have to take that one on notice.
Mackay Conservation Group's Alan Roberts and Dawson MP George Christensen in that exchange. Ms Roberts wrote to the committee this morning to inform them GetUp's donation had in fact not been tax deductible. The inquiry's terms of reference include examining the criteria for an entity to be listed on the Register of Environmental Organisations, a status which allows the organisation to accept donations on a tax-deductible basis. The committee is also looking into the activities undertaken by those organisations and several other issues. At yesterday's hearing, two groups argued that tax deduction benefits should not be taken away from listed organisations, while on the other side of the argument, several residents and business groups argued green groups were abusing their tax-deductible status. Small business owner Tara Medcalf is part of the Abbott Point Expansion Supporters Group.
It seems to be that Australia is under attack from these so-called green charity groups, and while we've all tried to not take things personally, it is rather difficult when their deceitful campaign directly impacts our families, friends, colleagues and community. What right do these charity groups, with their political agendas, have to dictate to us what we can and can't do? And then to top it all off, our government gives them tax breaks.
The tone of questioning from some MPs on the committee suggested they agreed with Ms. Medcalf's criticism of the tax concessions given to green groups, but they did appear to be impressed by the work of Reef Catchments, a sustainability and natural resource management group based in Mackay. The difference, as far as those MPs were concerned, appeared to be that Reef Catchments performed on-the-ground environmental work rather than political lobbying or advocacy. However, if those MPs were hoping Reef Catchment's CEO Rob Coco would criticise the tax deductions given to more politically active green groups, they would have been disappointed. Mr Coco says the tax concessions given to environmental groups are vitally important.
From our perspective, if outcomes for the inquiry were to see that removed, then it would have a direct impact in terms of higher cost to do business for us.
Mr Coco says while Reef Catchments doesn't involve itself in political lobbying, the advocacy work done by other green groups often brings about positive outcomes, including for projects Reef Catchments cooperates on with major industries.
David Sparks with that report. Soon on the Country Hour, as the sugar harvest passes the halfway mark, we'll check in with our coastal rural reporters to find out how the crush is going from one end of Queensland to the other. And sticking with sugar, is the debate over sugar marketing about to take a new turn? There's been a bit of reshuffling at the Australian Sugar Milling Council, so we'll see how that could affect future negotiations. It's 12:30.
The Country Hour on ABC Local Radio Queensland.
First though to news headlines with Robin McConkie.
Thanks very much, Marty. Well, making ABC News this afternoon, Tony Abbott says some colleagues have apologised for ousting him as Prime Minister last month. He's also exchanged text messages with his successor, Malcolm Turnbull. Mr Abbott's declined to say how he feels about Mr Turnbull, except to say that there'd been a lot of dirty water under the bridge. Queensland's Environment Minister has ordered rangers to remove wild horses from a state forest near Townsville, following a fatal crash. It's believed a teenager died yesterday when the car he was in hit a dead horse on the Bruce Highway. A report by CoreLogic RP Data says capital city home prices rose by nearly 1% last month. The Brisbane market increased by 1.4%. And in the NRL, North Queensland says they'll be heading into the grand final with a healthy respect for their opponents. The Cowboys face the Brisbane Broncos in the decider on Sunday. And Marty, we'll have more news at 1 o'clock.
Thanks, Robin. We'll head now to the Weather Bureau. Rick Threlfall is there. G'day, Rick.
Good afternoon, Marty.
There's a bit of a couple of cloudy and patchy rain sections over the south this week, but that doesn't seem to be the case today. Has that all cleared up a little bit?
It's pretty clear at the moment, but we are expecting further showers and thunderstorms to develop around the general southeast of the state through the course of today. We're starting to see a little bit of activity now developing on the higher ground just to the east of Toowoomba and down on the border ranges. And that'll probably be the main focus for some showers and storms initially today. But as we go through into the afternoon, we could see showers and storms really anywhere through the Darling Downs, getting into the Wide Bay and the southeast coast district quite generally through this afternoon. And with the atmosphere being pretty cold in the upper parts of the atmosphere, there is the risk of seeing some hail with those thunderstorms and also some damaging wind gusts as well. So there is a chance we might issue some warnings later on today around that sort of southeastern corner of the state. So do bear that in mind through the rest of this afternoon. But away from that sort of southeastern quarter of the state, once you get up north of about Rockhampton and up into the tropics generally, looking at fine and mostly sunny conditions really, and certainly through the west of the state for Longreach to Mount Isa, down into the southwest in the Channel Country and into places like Charleville, Cunnamulla, all just too dry there, very dry air over that part of the state. And with that, we do have some severe fire dangers for the northwestern parts of the state, for that northwestern district, just the dry air and fairly breezy conditions over the west of the state, adding to that high fire dangers. Today really is the last chance of any sort of significant rainfall really for most of the state. The upper trough that's causing the weather in the southeast moves offshore later on this evening, and then things stabilise quite markedly from Friday onwards. So the vast majority of the state, fine and sunny from Friday onwards. Just one or two showers on the north tropical coast, particularly on the Cassowary coast over the weekend. But away from that northeastern tropical coast, really, most of the state will be fine and mostly sunny from Friday onwards.
And so there's that large high developing over southeastern parts of the country starting today, I think. Is that, what will that do to conditions here? Is that what's clearing up a bit of the rain?
Yeah, so the high moves in and really sort of stabilises the atmosphere over the next few days. And then as it moves gradually eastwards from Friday onwards, the winds on the western side of that high pressure system start to turn around a bit more to the north over a large part of the state. And that means we'll see the temperatures start to warm up, the maximum temperatures particularly from Friday onwards, particularly over the southern interior as we go through the weekend into early next week. And we should start to see the temperatures getting into the mid-30s for a large part of the interior of the state by the time we get to Monday next week, and maybe getting up to, say, 37 for Thargomindah, 36 for Cunnamulla early next week. So starting to get particularly warm over that southern parts of the state. But really, that high just means a lot of dry weather around, apart from on the north tropical coast, where onshore winds will give some showers up there for the weekend.
Okay, thanks, Rick.
Cheers, thanks for that.
That's Rick Threlfall from the Brisbane Bureau of Meteorology.
ABC. Local Radio. Local Radio Queensland.
Your local ABC.
This is the Country Hour. Marty McCarthy keeping you company. And coming up, pigs on social media.
Yeah, well, the plan is that, and because obviously everyone's on Twitter and everyone's on Facebook, and that's the way people are understanding, you know, the world, and that's the way people are connecting. So if we could actually get a tweeting pig where we're actually, I guess, putting the narrative into the way the pig production cycle works.
Yeah, using social media to challenge animal welfare misconceptions coming up soon. But from swine to sugar, Queensland's sugar harvest has really hit its straps, with most mills past the halfway mark and many eyeing the finish line of the crushing season. But even as many districts enjoy near-perfect harvest conditions, there's no escaping the underlying pessimism as a result of the diabolical sugar price. Lara Webster takes up our statewide wrap in Australia's largest cane-growing district, the Burdekin, which has had a remarkable run so far.
More than 6 million tonnes of cane have now been crushed, and the season looks set to end in the first week of November. Chairman of Cane Growers Burdekin, Phil Morano, says the harvest is one of the fastest he's seen for a number of seasons.
We're on track to finish earlier than we have for probably the last 10 seasons. I wouldn't say we're going to break any records. There has been bigger crops where we have finished as early. I guess it all comes down to the mill's running well and how dry it's been.
Sugar content, or CCS as it's known, is up to 14.3 units and the target harvest estimate is 8.4 million tonnes. Heading north of Townsville to the Herbert River District, it's been a different story. Victoria Mill has been plagued by mechanical problems this week, with loadings across the Herbert reduced by around 70%. Wilmar's Paul Giordani says production is now back on track, with the crop revised upward to 4.35 million tonnes, with a current season average of 12.7 units.
Victoria Mill has had problems with the pans, which is where we boil the sugar, and prior to that we had leaks in what we call number 11 boiler. But those leaks have been repaired, the pan has been repaired, and we're now back to full production.
Growers will be hoping that continues as the Herbert heads toward a finish date of November 24. But in the far north, mills will be going later than that, as Charlie McKillop reports.
On the coast, MSF stablemates South Johnston and Mulgrave Central are putting behind them the difficult start to the season and are now crushing at record rates. And on the tableland, there's only 200,000 tonnes left to crush. Reliable factory performance has helped Mulgrave Mill to its season's second highest weekly throughput. The mill's now more than halfway through its estimated 1.35 million tonnes. Not to be outdone, South Johnston reached two milestones, the highest weekly crush in the mill's 99-year history, and the fourth time this season that the weekly tally has exceeded 80,000 tonnes, which in itself is a record. MSF Sugar's Phil Miskin is hoping it means the crush will be wrapped up by the first week of December.
I think they're all seeing a big difference in the operations of the factory, just in general performance of the factory, the consistently higher throughputs.
And now that you've hit that magic figure, 85,866... how high can you go?
I think the first thing I'd like to see is start seeing those numbers consistently week in, week out, Charlie. But, yeah, I'd expect to see perhaps throughput during the season, maybe a couple of thousand tonnes higher on the bigger weeks. That's probably around the mark. We expect to see 80,000 tonne weeks routinely for the rest of the season. And that's certainly what we've been seeing.
Things have not run as smoothly at Mossman, where mill owner Mackay Sugar is desperate not to repeat last year's disastrous season, which saw about 10% of the crop left standing in the paddock. The major difference this year is that 250,000 tonnes will be crushed at the Tableland Mill under an agreement between Mackay Sugar and MSF. It's relieved pressure on coastal growers like Doug Rasmussen. So has the 100 millimetres of rain on the weekend.
There was plant cane, especially the really late plant cane, that was starting to struggle because of the dry and the heat. There was quite a bit of heat in the middle of the day, so it was starting to show signs of stress. But no more now. It'll be okay for another month probably. But no, it's been good.
I guess the pressure is not quite as intense as it would have been had there not been a toll crushing agreement. Have you felt that pressure valve release for the growers on the coast?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Last year we were in all sorts of bother, and this year I think it's manageable. Perhaps we won't be having Christmas Day lunch in the paddock.
And right up until Christmas is exactly when Tully Sugar, Mill and growers will need to keep working to put away a record 2.55 million tonnes. That's 100,000 more than last year's record harvest, and a lot needs to go right between now and then. Now it's over to Callie Buchanan to report on the varying fortunes of Wilmar's two sugar mills in the Mackay District.
Wilmar's Plain Creek Mill in Serena is firing on all cylinders after crushing 910,000 tonnes of cane on its way to a target of 1.2 million. General Manager of Cane Supply, Paul Giordani, told David Sparks the mill has recorded the highest sugar content level of any in the state.
We've got an average in 15.2 for the year, and last week was 16.4. And it's incredible that Plain Creek's CCS levels remain the highest in the state.
Yeah, those are big numbers. Why is that?
Good question. If we knew that, we'd make sure that we do the same things year in, year out. But I'd have to hazard a guess that we were lucky enough that during the growth phase of the crop, it got the rain at the right time, so the crop is matured compared to, say, Mackay Sugar or Proserpine. Also, we didn't have the high propensity of yellow canopy syndrome this year. and follow on with the varieties and also the grower management practices. So all those things combined to give us very high CCS levels this year.
But Wilmar's Proserpine mill hasn't fared as well, taking a bigger hit from yellow canopy syndrome and poor rainfall. Three quarters of the way through the crop, its estimates have been revised down from 1.76 million tonnes to between 1.65 and 1.68. Meanwhile, Mackay Sugar's new chief executive, Jason Lowry, says milling performance at its three factories has improved.
If you take into account the 2 weeks of wet weather that we had at the start of the season, we're right where we would plan to be.
The crush there is expected to finish in mid-November. In the southern growing region, MSF's Maryborough mill has crushed 516,000 tonnes and General Manager Stuart Norton says despite losing several days to wet weather, it should reach its final tally of 830,000 tonnes by mid-November.
The mill's going very well. We have been dogged by a bit of wet weather down here, so we've probably lost a couple of days every week for about the last month for wet weather. So, probably just a little bit behind where we should be, but not really concerned at all, actually. And the rain's been very beneficial for this year's crop and for next year's crop as well.
In Bundaberg, growers and contractors have been frustrated by failures in boiler tubes at Bundaberg Sugar's Milliquin mill, which has interrupted the crush at least three times this season. It's not yet known what's causing the issue, but it's being investigated as the mill approaches the three-quarter mark of its season. The mill's now revised upwards its base CCS to 14.3, improving by about a quarter of a unit a week. Meanwhile, as dry conditions continue and temperatures rise in the Childers region, the Isis mill is already looking at irrigating for the next crop. It's crushed 927,000 tonnes to date with a CCS of 13.9.
Kelly Buchanan ending that report on the crushing season. It's pretty clear all cane districts will be walking the delicate tightrope between the dry conditions needed to complete the harvest and the rain required to grow the next crop. And as the crush rolls on, yesterday marked an endpoint for one of the best known names in the industry. Outgoing Mackay Sugar Chief Executive Quinton Hildebrand stood down as chairman of the Australian Sugar Milling Council. He will be replaced by Wilmar's John Pratt, who's overseen that company's controversial decision to quit the existing sugar marketing pool. It sparked an exodus of other milling companies from the pool, but Mackay Sugar has remained loyal to QSL. Yesterday, Mr. Hildebrand was not willing to speculate on how his departure might affect the way forward as the millers and growers search for a solution to the current deadlock.
Well, there is a process that the industry is going through, trying to negotiate outcomes for the marketing. That really resides with the industry leadership at this stage. And as today will be my last day, I probably am not the right person to speculate on the way forward. But just to say that, I'm confident that the industry will find a way forward, as it has through many issues in the past. And as we all know, there's many issues within the industry, and the sooner we can find resolution to the marketing issue, the better for the industry as we position for the future.
Quinton Hildebrand, it's been a tumultuous time for arguably any CEO of any sugar mill, but particularly so for you, as it's a year in which you've been forced to defend the leadership of Mackay Sugar. What would you have done differently if you had the chance?
My 7 years in the industry have been a really exciting time. We've faced some headwinds with lower prices and crop issues from time to time. But I've really enjoyed my time in the industry.
The purchase of Mossman Sugar Mill in far north Queensland has certainly been a source of angst for your shareholders at Mackay. How confident are you that that mill will be able to perform at the level it needs to be viable into the future?
Well, if you review the investment in Mossman, one that we purchased Mossman for $25 million at half a million tonnes of cane, we've doubled the production and made that a sustainable mill. So in the long run, you'll see that the value is there. Obviously, the transition and doubling the throughput through the mill has its challenges. But, I think this year is reflecting a much steadier state for the Mossman operations, and I'm sure will provide good returns to Mackay Sugar into the future.
Would you have been able to broker the deal with the Tableland growers had you been sitting down at the table now with the sugar price at 11 cents a pound as opposed to 20 or 30 cents as it was just a few years ago?
Well, we're in a low sugar price environment. It is a cyclical commodity. These kind of decisions are long-term decisions, and I think, yes, the relationship that we've got with the Tablelands growers is a long-term one, and it's from that basis that I think that the decisions that have been made in the past have been sensible ones.
Quinton Hildebrand, you're speaking about long-term decisions and a long-term future for the company that you'll no longer be a part of. Is there a sense of unfinished business for you at Mackay?
I think every company should go through some renewal. Mackay Sugar's in good hands with the new incoming CEO, Jason Lowry. You know, from my point of view, there'll always be unfinished business in an industry and in a company. Companies live on. I will obviously watch it with keen interest, as I'm very fond of Mackay Sugar and the sugar industry. I wish the industry well and look forward to keeping in contact with people within the industry.
That's outgoing Mackay Sugar CEO Quinton Hildebrand, who yesterday stood down as the chairman of the Australian Sugar Milling Council. He was speaking there with Charlie McKillop. Mr. Hildebrand has taken up a position with poultry giant Ingham's based in Sydney. Tweeting pigs up soon. It's 10 minutes to 1 on the Country Hour.
The Country Hour on ABC Local Radio Queensland.
Cotton growers are one step closer to local management of irrigation water. Cotton Australia says four Queensland water management schemes have been approved to continue the move towards local management agreements. Three of the four schemes, which are located in St George, Emerald, Theodore and Eaton, are located in major cotton growing regions. Cotton Australia says the local management authority process will shift management of water assets from Sunwater's irrigation channel scheme to locals. This next stage will see the irrigation communities in these schemes enter into negotiation with the state government on final terms and then commence the transition process. And you can hear more on that story on your local rural report tomorrow morning.
This is ABC Local Radio Queensland.
A West Australian farmer wants to get her pigs tweeting, as in on the social media website Twitter. Ignoring the fact that her pigs have trotters and therefore can't type, Sue Middleton from Wongan Hills thinks it's a great idea. Sue says if she can somehow get her pigs on social media, it'll help her to challenge misconceptions about farm animal welfare. She says she also wants to explore 24/7 video streaming technology in her pigsty so that animal activists and the general public have easy insight into how her animals are raised.
Yeah, well, what we want to be able to do is show what the life of a pig looks like, because we think there's a lot of misinformation out there about how pig production works, and we think our system is really healthy and it's a really safe and happy environment for our pigs. So we want to be able to show what that looks like, and we want to do it through the eyes of a pig.
And so you want to essentially get your pigs on Twitter to do that?
Yeah, well, what we kind of have been thinking about is, well, if you could actually show what the life of a pig looked like through camera, and so you're actually showing what their growing environment's like and how they, you know, feed and what their social environment's like, and, you know, just kind of everything about the, I guess, the five freedoms that we think are really essential to growing, you know, great pigs. And, you know, the kind of people always say to us, so we bring, you know, people through the piggery and they say, this is exactly the way we want to see pigs produced. But that's not what you see. You know, it's not what an average person sees pig production looking like. So we want to be able to show people that we're actually producing really healthy pigs in a really sustainable way. And we think that's really exciting.
You'll use social media to tell that story.
Yeah, well, the plan is that, and because obviously everyone's on Twitter and everyone's on Facebook, and that's the way people are understanding, you know, the world, and that's the way people are connecting. So if we could actually get a tweeting pig where we're actually, I guess, putting the narrative into the way the pig production cycle works, so that people can actually then get a real hand experience, because not everyone gets an opportunity to go into a piggery. And that's the issue, because, like, if every person in Australia, if we could bring 20 million people through our piggery, people, I think, would think, yeah, I'm really okay about pig production in this country. This is a really sustainable system. So We need to find an equivalent of doing that, and I think social media is the opportunity, and it's the way we can talk to more people about pig production.
How do you technically do that? Do you put a camera on the back of a pig, or I don't know, what does it look like?
Yeah, that's the problem, because pigs are really inquisitive, and you know, holding a camera on the back of a pig is not going to be a possible thing.
So you've tried that?
No, well, we haven't actually put a camera on the back of a pig. But the thing we have to be able to do is somehow put a camera in our piggery so that people can look at that 24 hours a day. Because one of the things that I think all of the people from, you know, like Animals Australia or Voiceless say is that going through a piggery is not enough, because they can't trust Australian farmers. So we need to be able to show them that 24 hours a day you can come into a piggery and you can see what that looks like, and you can know what a production system really is like for the pigs. And otherwise what happens is that other voices and other people create the narrative for what that pig's life is like, and you would see pictures which are quite distressing. I see them myself in advertising campaigns for organisations that are trying to shut down animal farming, and they're just not correct. They're just not true. That is not how we are, you know, working with animals and producing our livestock. So I want to be able to create another voice, basically, and say there is. The truth about how we are doing this is that it's a really great system.
Even if you are able to achieve transparency with your own business, that's not to say that the entire industry will be doing the right thing. There will still be the rogue operators. How do you make sure everyone is doing the right thing?
Yeah, look, that's a big question, I think, Marty, because you know, your job as a farmer is not to make sure that every other farmer is doing the job the same way as you are. It's just not what you can do. But I think that, you know, certainly accreditation programs, which everyone in the pig industry who sells into an accredited supply chain follows, that it's very strict. And it's the strictest accreditation program we do out of all of our businesses. And I think also the just, you know, lots of industries are doing best management practice programs. And so consumers can actually be really certain that what they're eating is really safe and really healthy food. And we can do that through these programs. So it's really, you know, just about people looking out for all of the different, you know, logos that you'll see on food, which is farmers telling you that we have followed a program and that we're certifying this for you because we want you to eat really fantastically healthy food.
That's Sue Middleton, who has two pig farms north of Perth, one at Wongan Hills and another at Northam. I don't know, would you watch that 24/7 pig action? I don't know if I would. It's like the Big Brother of pigs, only probably a little bit more tedious. You're listening to The Country Hour with Marty McCarthy.
abc.net.au/local.
This is ABC Local Radio Queensland.
Your local ABC.
Don't forget, you can find all our stories online at abc.net.au/rural, including that story about the satellite that should hopefully help the NBN service roll out. That story is online at the moment. And you'll also see a version of that on landline at midday on Sunday, so keep an eye out for that. Market's up next. We'll head to the Roma Prime Sale now with Martin Bunyard. He has all the quotes.
Well, good afternoon, Marty. 1,200 head were yarded, an improvement in the quality and increased numbers of bullocks attracted strong exporter processor competition. Medium weight grown steers sold to 318 cents a kilogram, an average 314, while bullocks topped at 318 also, an average 312. Medium weight grown heifers earned to $2.90 a kilo, an average 288, and the heavy grown heifers sold to 290 also, an average 288. Medium weight three-score cows under 520 kilos reach 251, an average 241, while medium fat cows made to 263, an average 255. Heavy fat cows sold to $2.66 a kilo, an average 259. Medium weight bull sold to $3.03, while heavy bulls reach 296, an average 283 cents a kilo.
I'm Martin Bunyard reporting from Roma Sale Yards for MLA's Nationalised Stock Reporting Service.
Cheers, Martin. And we'll take a quick look at the commodity prices in New York. The October futures contract for number 11 sugar is 12.17 US cents a pound, up 0.41. December cotton, 60.23 US cents per pound. On the Chicago Board of Trade, December corn is 385.5 US cents per bushel, up a quarter of a US cent. December wheat, 512 quarters. No change there. That's it for the Country Hour today. I'm Marty McCarthy, filling in for Craig Zonka. You can find all our stories online at abc.net.au/rural. It's news time now, heading up to 1 o'clock.